Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Plant the Spear Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and I'd like to welcome you to the show. Before we get into this episode, I need to interrupt real fast. We've kind of had two updates that are relevant to this podcast I want to provide that happened between the time of recording and probably the time you'll be listening to it. First off, one of the things I address in this episode is the ACC doing away with divisions in their new scheduling model because the NCAA was in talks of relaxing the requirements of having divisions to hold a conference championship game to name a champion. Well, as of yesterday, May the 18th, that has officially passed, so divisions are no longer required. And the Pac-12, actually, a few moments after that, they were going to a two best in the conference to determine a champion versus a divisional championship matchup, similar to what the ACC proposed. So it almost seems at this point that the new ACC scheduling model, depending on their talks with ESPN, is almost inevitable. The next rather spicy update was last night. Nick Saban kind of threw a bomb onto college football. He called out Texas A&M. He called out Jackson State. And he also called out Miami for buying players through NIL deals. So he kind of went at everybody's throat last night. This is going to be pretty interesting how this plays out, especially coming from a guy whose team is rumored to have $3 million in NIL deals. Dion has already promised a response coming soon. So yeah, those Affleck commercials are about to be lit. We'll see where it goes from here. So now back to your episode. On today's episode, I want to cover a few topics that are kind of the hot topics of college football right now. Obviously, NIL being the big one. We're also going to talk about some possible changes coming to the ACC after they wrapped up their spring meetings. And just a few more things. Going to talk about some of the revenue gap issues in college football that I think is really kind of an underrated issue. But before we get into it, I just hope everybody's doing good out there. Hopefully you're enjoying the warmer weather as summer approaches. It's going to be in the upper 90s where I live over the next couple days. So unless it involves a pool or some kind of water, I don't know how much I'll be going outside. Also, one other thing, I want to give a quick shout out to the FSU softball team. Took home the ACC championship after defeating Clemson. It was a huge win for them, 17th ACC championship, I believe. Just such a dominant program, and also really fun to watch. Just the way they play, the team aspects, they just celebrate together, they just have a good time, they're so fun to watch. Coach Lonnie Almeida, she's just a great ambassador for the sport. So congratulations to them, and good luck going forward. I know they still got a lot ahead of them. You know, an ACC championship is not good enough for this team. They are to that level where it's good, but it's not enough. They want to win on the bigger stage in the national picture. So good luck to them going forward. I know it's going to be a tough competition, but I'm sure they're ready for it. Also, FSU track and field took home an ACC championship. That's big too. So it's been a pretty good week to be a FSU fan. Baseball also took home a series win against the Canes, which is also, you know, I mean, anytime you beat Miami in anything, that's a good feeling. And that puts us this year as winning in baseball, basketball, and football. So, hey, sucks to be you, huh? But that being said, I guess we'll just go ahead and get into it. We'll start with some NIL talk, just some thoughts. Everybody's kind of throwing in their two cents where they feel about it. I'm kind of neutral on the situation, I think, because it's so new. I think we still have a lot to figure out. There's not a whole lot of groundwork laid, which obviously is part of the problem with NIL. I think that this is kind of one of those things where it was a long time coming. I think that it is something that needed to be addressed because you had such a large pie in the college football world as far as money goes that it was outdated system where the players didn't get any monetary gain other than the scholarship. And I know that's a lot to some it's not, they don't consider it enough, but you know, that is a lot that they produce for the game of college football. And so I don't think anyone's arguing with the fact that they are getting a portion of that. Now, with that being said, I think this is one of those situations where they let the cat out of the bag and it turned around and clawed him in the face. I don't think anybody was ready for how this was handled right out of the gate. But to be fair, anytime you have anything that involves money, competition, sports, winning, losing, anything like that, people are going to exploit any possible way, any gap in the rules, any loophole that they can. And in a way, you can't blame them for that. But I feel like the direction it's headed is not going to be good for the game. and I do feel like something has to be put in place to put some guardrails on it. Now, I don't think anybody disagrees with that. I know some people just don't like the idea of players getting paid at all, which to a degree I can understand that a little bit as well, but just the value they bring to the game, I think they deserve something. I think as far as NIL goes, when you look at a player like Jordan Addison, the receiver from Pitt, and just to put it out there that everything that I've seen so far is rumored. He's still in the portal from what I understand. He's still not signed with anybody. So it's all hypothetical right now because we've only heard rumors of what the deal is to be worth. However, I think it's a perfect example of where NIL is kind of going wrong. So the rumored deal initially that came out with USC before some other bidders got involved was somewhere in the range of $3 million and a house in LA. Now, I understand he might help them to a great degree on the field, but I think what people lose sight of is the basis of what NIL truly is. NIL is based off exactly what it says. It's your name, image, and likeness, not being paid for your play on the field or what you bring as far as the playing aspect. It is basically your advertising or sales value or, you know, whatever you want, however you want to wrap that up, package that up. And is Jordan Addison's value in the advertising world going to call for $3 million worth of value and a house in LA, which you know is probably really expensive as well? Probably not. Was somebody going to go buy a new car or whatever product he's going to pitch just because a college athlete receiver in LA, in such a large market like LA, recommends it? Probably not. Now, could he help USC if that's where he signs? Could he help them find success on the field? And could that translate into more money, how much revenue that brings to the program if, say, they were to make the playoffs or win a conference championship, what have you? How much would that be worth? That I really can't say. That's something that is probably out of my realm of knowledge to know. But I think when you just look at the pay-for-play model and the tampering rumors that have already come out, because we have seen multiple coaches say that they've had their players tampered with. Whether you choose to believe that or not, I believe it is the case. And so that's something I think that's going to be a bad aspect for the game. Now, again, like I said, there are some positive aspects to it. It's not all bad. I mean, look at years ago when you had the Georgia player who got suspended for signing his own autograph. That's his name, which is worth whatever it was worth due to his play on the field. And while the school's sitting there collecting millions upon millions of dollars in revenue, he's getting suspended for signing his own name. It's just ridiculous. It really is. So I think just giving the players an opportunity to provide for their family. You know, a lot of these players don't get to go to the NFL. Just because you're in college doesn't mean you're going to go on to be a multimillionaire in the NFL. So giving them an opportunity to make some money at the collegiate level and provide for their families, and to be honest, some of this could be life-changing money because we're talking about some players looking at six figures, if not more. I think that potential is a good thing, but I also think there are potential problems that are going to come along with it. And I think that one of the biggest problems of NIL is only going to be made worse by the revenue gap in college football, which in my opinion, I believe is more damaging to the sport than NIL itself. Because when you look at the transfer portal, NIL, and the revenue gap, first thing, you almost create free agency. And then you have a sort of free agency market where you have a lot of teams that can outbid the smaller teams who don't make as much money. And by smaller programs, I don't mean FCS or Group of Five. Let's take Pitt, for example, because we've already used them with Jordan Addison. So say you have Pitt waging up against, say, USC or Alabama or any of the other programs that are rumored to be in the mix for Addison. Do you really think Pitt wants to get into a bidding war with USC or Alabama or even Florida State for that matter? Do you think Florida State wants to get into a bidding war with one of those teams? Probably not. And so when you look at the revenue gap and you're arming really mainly two conferences, the Big Ten and the SEC, with a lot more ammunition than the other conferences, unless you have a very large booster base or a rich booster, you know, say in the instance we've seen in Miami, where they have this billionaire who's kind of trying to pay players and buy players and whatnot, which is probably going to end up getting them in trouble. I guess they didn't learn the first time. But, you know, that's something where I think it can exploit the problem even worse when you have the Big Ten and the SEC that in the future they're projecting to make significantly more than the ACC, Group of Five, and all the other Power Five conferences. And that's just not good for the sport. I mean, while NIL may be causing some problems because you may not have these other schools that are able to keep up, it's also hard whenever you don't make as much money as the other conferences. And will there be a scenario someday where you could have something like an SEC or a Big Ten team who's making many, many millions more come in and buy your best players? Could that happen? It surely could. It very well could. I know this may sound like a drastic example, but say, for instance, back in 2013, you're going on a good run. You got this potential Heisman-winning quarterback, Jameis Winston, playing for you, and all of a sudden, an NIL deal comes along from an SEC team or a Big Ten team with a lot more money than Florida State, and they steal away your best player and kill your chances of having success. And I do think that that is something that could potentially be a huge problem. Granted, you could, as a program of your own, go and counteroffer them, of course, because you've already managed to get the player on campus, so he obviously likes where he's at. But again, if you can't outbid, then there's the potential there that you could lose some of your best players just because you don't have the financial resources that other programs have. Now, again, we look at the case of like the ACC versus the national picture. Sure, the ACC lags behind the Big Ten and the SEC in revenue, but to be honest, to be fair about it, we as Florida State as a program, it's kind of hard for us to go out and say, well, we can't keep up with the Big Ten and the SEC when we can't really even beat the teams in the ACC. And I feel like that is a problem right now that we need to focus on more than anything, because Florida State has, I'm sure, outside of Clemson maybe, has more resources than most ACC programs as far as viewership, fans in the stands, revenue, boosters, donors, etc. Florida State is probably well positioned in the top 2 to 3 of the ACC. So when you're losing to teams like Wake Forest, Louisville, teams like that, then it's kind of hard to sit there and worry about the national picture when you really kind of got to focus on your own backyard first and start winning the ACC games that you really need to not have to be worried about teams like Boston College and Syracuse. Of course, those teams are trying to win too. I mean, let's not take anything away from them, but you have to be able to beat those teams and handle your business in the ACC before you go worrying about the national picture. But it will get to a point, and I'm sure Florida State's not going to be down forever. Obviously, this is a proud program with a lot of tradition, and they're going to, I hope, find a way back to being in the national picture. You just hope that when you get to that stage, the game is not so far gone that teams from the ACC or the Big 12 or the Pac-12 or whoever just can't compete based on revenue factors. And I do think, back to NIL, why one of the reasons a lot of people don't have an issue with some of the players getting paid is just looking at the coaches. You got coaches that are making $5, $6, $7, $8, in some cases $9 million a year. They're free to leave whenever they want, take with whoever they want, apparently. And so I don't think that people are mad at the players. I'm certainly not. I'm not mad at the players for whether you feel like it's overvalued or undervalued what some of them are getting. I'm not mad at them for taking advantage of it. I mean, who wouldn't? Because let's be honest. I mean, we'll keep it real. If you work for somebody making, say, $50,000, $60,000 a year, which isn't even the case in college football, and someone came along and offered you a $3 million deal as well as a house for free to live in, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm out. Peace. See ya. You know, I appreciate the time that we spent at the job, but that's life-changing money. And I'm not going to be mad at some 17 to 18, 19, 20-year-old kid for taking advantage of that, because they may not ever have that opportunity again. So, I mean, if someone offered me the same deal, where do you want me and where do you need me to sign? Because I'm there. And I'm sure that's most of us. Because I really don't know anybody who's going to turn down that kind of money. So I don't really blame the players for taking advantage of it. Now, I do think you do have some situations where these deals may be a little overvalued. You know, how much do they really bring in marketing value, like we talked about before? But I don't necessarily know that that's the problem as much as I feel like, because people do say let the market set itself. And I do think right now it's just a wild west and it's pay for play and the tampering. And I don't think it's truly based on the value. And at some point, I think the market, it will correct itself to a degree, because in business, I mean, you have only so many people are going to be willing to just throw this money around for such a long time to all these players, because at some point in business, you want a return on investment. And paying a college athlete $3 million a year or over the course of their career there probably isn't sustainable for very long, especially if it has to filter back to falling on the backs of smaller time boosters. And I just don't see this model being sustainable. Now, will it crash college football or kill college football, like a lot of people like to say? I don't know that it will or won't. I don't think it's good for college football. But to be fair, I mean, the only thing in life that's constant, as the saying goes, is change. And this is not the same game as it was before. There's a lot more money involved. There's huge TV deals. It's not the same game that it was that a lot of us grew up with. So things are changing. Times are changing. And you just have to adapt and overcome. You have to survive in advance, or you will get crushed and you will get left behind. You don't have to feel good about it, but your feelings don't matter. If you don't step up to the plate and take advantage of the things that are in place right now, that'll be your fate. That'll be what puts the nail in the coffin. And for instance, I think while it may not have been any doing of their own, when you look at the Big 12, losing Texas and Oklahoma is probably going to be a nail in the coffin for that conference. I could see where going forward in a few years, they're kind of similar to Group of Five, or might have the same fate of the Big East, where it was a one-time, not prominent, but good conference that has turned into now being renamed and is a Group of Five conference. So I do think that there is a lot of potential here to cause havoc in the game. I think it will eventually lead to looking at the super conferences, like everybody says they think the model is going to go to. I know there has been some talk lately from the ADs around the country. There's been some talk from the NCAA about them wanting to put some things in place, some guardrails to kind of keep the competition level fair. Because I know this is going to sound kind of bad, but I don't really blame the Big Ten and the SEC and the teams with the large boosters or what have you. I honestly can't say that I blame them too much for exploiting the rules, because this is a dog-eat-dog world. You know, this is a survive-and-advance or kill-or-be-killed type of environment in college football, because let's face it, it is an arms race. It is about winning and losing, and that's about it. Unfortunately, I think that the game has moved past the student-athlete to a degree. It has moved against whatever you want to call it, but the morals and the ethics of the game, we all know at the end of the day, it's about winning and money, and that's truly what it's become. And for being good or bad, that's kind of indifferent on our opinion, because it's still, that's the way the game is. And so I think that when you have that opportunity to exploit a rule to put yourself in a position to win and bring in more revenue, you have to take advantage of that, or else as a coaching staff, you could get fired. Your program could fall on hard times. And I think that you have to do whatever you have to do to win. So I can't really say that I blame some of these teams or conferences, because let's be honest, if, say, the Spanx lady opened up the purse and dumped a pile of money into Florida State's lap, I'm sure we would like to take advantage of that as well. I'm sure we wouldn't be mad if, say, Florida State had a pile of cash and we could go out and grab whatever player we needed to bring our school back to the level of competition that we wanted to be. I'm sure we would be happy with that too. I feel like really, as far as your view on NIL, realistically depends on which side of the fence your program is on that you're a fan of. If you're one of the haves that can go out and do these things and exploit these rules, you're probably pretty happy right now. If you're, say, a Texas A&M fan or USC or what have you, you're probably pretty excited. If you're a team like Pitt, or one of the other teams that are kind of getting rated for their best players, I'd probably be a little pissed about it. And that's just honest. That's the honest truth, because you're getting left behind in almost an unfair advantage because of revenue that you just don't have. You can't keep up, which is why I do think that they have to put some guardrails on this, as well as the transfer portal. I think the portal is a good thing, because I don't think anybody should be locked into somewhere for 4 years, because times change and situations change. How many times have you maybe started a job and then after a few months it started out great, but then you weren't happy? Maybe it took a year or two for you to figure out that you weren't happy. And so I do think the players should be allowed to move on to another situation, but I also think that it should be have some kind of guardrails to where you can't just transfer all the time, to where you don't combine the portal with NIL to create almost free agency. And so I think all of it needs to be reined in, but by who? And I think that is the burning question in college football right now, is who is going to be the one to rein all this in? Because I don't think you're going to see a situation where, say, the Big Ten and the SEC feel bad for the ACC or little old Florida State or whoever, or Pitt or whatever, because they don't have enough money to outbid them. They're not going to do that. So is it going to be the NCAA? Maybe, but probably not, because we've seen in the past where the NCAA, they don't really do anything about anything, especially on the enforcement wing. They either don't enforce the punishment, or they rescind it, or they take so long to enforce it, you're punishing players, coaches, and programs long after the people who probably committed the violations are long gone. I mean, Penn State is a perfect example. Sure, it was terrible what happened there in the past, but you punished a program and players who had nothing to do with that and came years after all that was over and done with. And so it just takes them so long to do anything. It takes them so long to wrap up investigations and deliver punishments. And usually when they do, it's either weak-handed or they go back and they revisit the punishment and rescind some of the things. So it's probably going to have to come from federal regulation, which is kind of what birthed NIL in the first place. So I think if you have a situation where you're making money off of your name, image, and likeness from, say, a football game like NCAA. By the way, EA Sports, if you're listening, it's time. Let's bring it back. NIL's here. Pay them. Get this game back. Let's go. Or in some kind of advertisement deal or something like that, that's fair and equal value for the player. I don't have a problem with it at all. I don't. Next up, I think the next thing that I'd like to talk about, we'll go into kind of the revenue gap issue in college football. I got some pretty interesting and rather startling numbers to share with you. And like I said before, I think that the revenue gap is going to be more of a killer to the game of college football than NIL or the transfer portal will be, because you're going to create such an unfair advantage to a few teams and a few conferences that you're either going to have to go to super conferences, or it's not going to be anywhere near a level playing field. A lot of people like to compare it to, say, if the AFC and the NFC had two different salary caps and two different revenue levels. Would it be fair? No, of course it wouldn't. So some of the numbers that I want to share with you. First, we'll start with, I found through navigate.com, so shout out to them for the numbers. They did some projections, and these are the average payout estimates per team per conference. And what they do is they start with the 2022 numbers, and then they extend out to 2029. The Power 2, as they're now being referred to in the Big Ten and the SEC, I'll share their numbers versus the ACC, because the other conferences kind of fall in about the same line. So in 2022, the Big Ten and the SEC are looking at $57.2 million and $54.3 million. The ACC is coming in at $30.9 million. So you already have about a $24 million gap right there off the bat. And that's just coming up this year. So when you extend it out to 2029, it only gets worse. The Big Ten will average $94.5 million, whereas the SEC will average $105.3 million average payout, and the ACC will be at $55.3 million. Now, again, these are projections and estimates, but if there's already such a large gap now, and if you add in the SEC getting Texas and Oklahoma, which is, I'm sure, what boosts their numbers so largely so fast, it's only going to get worse, and it's only going to get harder for teams in the ACC and these other conferences to keep up, and Florida State happens to be one of those. And they could surely renegotiate TV deals through the ACC, which is something that we did hear Commissioner Jim Phillips say, that they're trying to create some new methods to get bigger matchups to do that. But we all know the ACC has locked in their grant of rights until 2036, which may have been maybe a wise decision at the time when they did it, but you're kind of screwing yourself now, because they're having a hard time getting out of it, and, or at least renegotiating it. And another problem that you're looking at is, let's say hypothetically, they do go to this super conference model. Well, if you have a very large buyout to get these ACC teams out of their TV contracts, their grant of rights, would it even be worth it for the Super Conference to come and grab a team like, say, Clemson and Florida State? Now, of course, with the history and the tradition and the success that those teams have had, Of course, we feel like those teams are going to get a seat at the table. And, of course, I imagine they would. I mean, it would be hard to imagine a world where big boy football does not include Clemson, Miami, and Florida State. You know, maybe a couple other teams from the ACC, but those are really marquee brands. But again, I mean, if you have, they're already generating so much revenue and they would have to pay some insane buyout to get these teams, could it be worth it? You know, I don't want to get there and find out that it's not. And so I think Florida State knows and the ACC knows that they have to do something to boost their brand. And that's another thing on an individual level at FSU that we've seen the president and the new AD Michael Alford talk about is you have to put yourself back in that marketable position. You have to make football key number one because it is the main revenue driver. And so you need to be back on level because let's face it, right now it's kind of a hard sell to pay all that money for a team that's a program that's currently in the condition that Florida State is in. With that being said, Florida State is still a big name brand. It still draws a lot of viewers, a lot of attendance when compared to the other teams in the ACC. And so the logo still holds weight, and we know that. But on a national stage, it is lagging. And there are some other numbers I want to share with you real quick, because I think one of the issues that I'm finding is when you want to ask for more money, when you want to renegotiate these TV contracts, you have to look at from the TV perspective, kind of like we talked about with NIL, what are you bringing to the table to warrant all this money, to want more money? And some of the numbers that I found kind of show that the ACC has to make changes, that they have to do something to be able to ask for this money that they need to keep up. Because right now, when you look at the numbers, it's kind of a hard sell. So let's take, for instance, the conference championship games from last season. Now, with that being said, first, I know that the SEC championship was a huge matchup between Alabama and Georgia. It had playoff implications. You had the AAC where would Cincinnati be the first group of five to make it to the playoffs? I know there was a lot of big implications in these games. I also understand that the ACC was Pitt versus Wake Forest, which is not the marquee brands of the ACC. But when we just break down the numbers for what they are, the SEC championship had 15.27 million viewers. The Big Ten championship had 11.65 million viewers. The Big 12 championship was 8 million viewers. Pac-12 at 4.24. The AAC had more than the ACC at 3.41. And the ACC came in at 2.66 million. So as you can see, if you want to demand more money, you have to have a bigger, better product to be able to demand that money, to warrant that increased income that the TV companies are going to have to put out. And to look even further into some more numbers that I found, when you look at some of the top viewed teams from 2021, and I'll just kind of read off the list here. This ranks all of FBS, but I won't bore you with all the numbers. So number one is Ohio State, two is Michigan, three is Alabama, four is Penn State, five is Georgia, six is Oklahoma, Auburn was seven, Michigan State at eight, Notre Dame at nine, Oregon at 10. And as you can see so far, we haven't got to the first ACC team. We have to go all the way down to Clemson at number 19, and Florida State comes in at 25. So when you also look at some other numbers that they give here, you have what they consider the 4 million club, which is games that broke 4 million views, which is, I guess, a benchmark for TV numbers. Only three games that involved an ACC team that broke 4 million viewers, and one of which was Georgia Clemson, which also featured an SEC team, Notre Dame and Florida State, and then you also had, I believe it was Alabama and Miami. That was the only ACC games that got over 4 million views last year, and two of them featured an SEC team and one was a non-ACC team, I guess if you consider Notre Dame non-ACC. So that's something that has to be addressed. You have to step up the product, which I think they're trying to do, to be able to demand that money. And even when you look at attendance, which we know has been a problem for college football recently, I know that the attendance numbers have been declining, and that's more HGTVs have come down. People don't want to travel as much. People are just busier. They don't have as much time. But when I looked at all the average rankings for attendance that I could find, it was a five-year average that ended in 2019, which with 2020 being the pandemic year with no or limited fans, that's probably a pretty fair range to gather numbers from. And so the average ACC attendance, when you average all the teams together, the average conference attendance was around 49,000 fans. The SEC averaged 77,000 fans, with 79 if you factor in Texas and Oklahoma. Then when you go to the Big Ten, they averaged 66,000. And this, again, was ranking all the FBS teams in order. The highest-ranked ACC team was 14 at Clemson and 18 at FSU. SEC had 4, 5, 6, 7, 9, 11, and 12, all ahead of the ACC. Big Ten had 1, 2, 3, 10, 16, 19, and so on. So you can see where the issue is as far as the ACC and just having those big marquee matchups, having the big, large fan bases, the large following. And I feel like that has a lot to do with why you're being left behind. You obviously have Florida State and Clemson and Miami to a degree, who are the big name brands. And you also have to look at, I don't think anyone foresaw the coastal teams such as Miami and Virginia Tech just face planting when you let them into the ACC, when you invited them in from the Big East. I mean, who could see Miami absolutely just face planting over the past however long they've been in the ACC? I mean, they have really never accomplished anything. They made it to one ACC championship game in which they got blown out in. So I think the ACC is trying to make some changes to address this issue, and it is very well needed. And that's the next thing I want to talk about, is some of the changes that are being proposed to the ACC. But before we get into that, I do think that it is at least promising to see that they're willing to make the changes. I think we got a new commissioner now, Jim Phillips, who is willing to explore these options, which is something that they just really weren't willing to do before. And it was kind of like the NCAA. They just kind of let everything go status quo. And then when it was kind of too late, now you're doing damage control. So to have someone who is in the driver's seat, who knows there's an issue and knows change needs to happen, that's promising. So some of the talks have been the big news that came out of the meetings in Florida that they had was the changing of the schedule format, doing away with divisions, because the NCAA is looking at doing away with the requirement to have divisions to have a conference championship game, which we saw in the past where not having that game hurt the Big 12 and could potentially cause you to miss out on the playoffs. So with potentially doing away with divisions, you have a few changes that come with that. Obviously, the scheduling format would change. They're looking at going to like a 3 protected rival and 5 rotating conference opponents type of schedule. And, you know, we don't know who would be Florida State's 3 protected rivals, which would be teams that you would play every year. Obviously, we know Miami would be one. You have to protect that rivalry. And then I assume you would probably get Clemson, although I don't know if you want your 2 biggest brands meeting up during the season, because the other thing that comes with the new scheduling model and no divisions is it would be your 2 best teams playing in the conference championship game. So you could have a potential rematch between really any 2 teams. So I think a lot of people are looking for Georgia Tech to be put on there. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that you have a game that would be close for a lot of FSU fans to make it to. You have a high concentration of FSU fans in the Atlanta area. I think that would be a good matchup. Maybe Virginia Tech could be put on there. I think it would be cool to go to Blacksburg. There's a lot of variations in the ACC that you could see that maybe you would want to play. You would get more variety of the teams you have to play, because I don't know how many people are making the trip to Syracuse or Boston to go watch a kind of a who cares ACC game. But the one thing to remember is during his press conference, the ACC commissioner mentioned that first things first, they would have to talk over all the changes, potential changes, and ideas with their revenue partner, which obviously is ESPN, which I do think is smart. I mean, you're looking at, they want to make the changes that are necessary, not just making them for the sake of making changes. You want to do things that are going to bring value to the conference, because the ACC has to find ways to add value to get the bigger matchups to potentially renegotiate the contracts for the TV revenue, which is ultimately going to be the main driver of revenue for the ACC, just like it is the other conferences. And I think you have to start getting these bigger marquee matchups to get that, because again, you look at the ACC championship game as a perfect example, where in recent history, the Coastal has just not shown up. How many times could you have had a rematch of, say, Florida State Clemson or NC State Clemson, NC State Florida State, what have you, where you don't end up in a situation where, as Florida State fans were familiar with 2013, where FSU played Duke and it was a 45-7 beatdown. Now imagine the ratings you would have had of a rematch between Florida State and Clemson that year versus Florida State Duke. And I was at that game, and there was not a ton of fans there. I mean, sure, you had a decent showing from Duke because it was, I believe, their first ACC championship. It's right close to their campus. But I do go to that game because I live in Charlotte pretty often, and it's really never a sold-out crowd. It's never really a big, huge showing. And there could have been a lot better matchups by having the two best teams in the conference versus just the two division champions. Because I did look it up before where you had the ACC, where you had Clemson. Now, to be fair, Clemson has kind of, you know, just beat the brakes off everybody in the last few years, with the exception of last year. But obviously they're from the Atlantic. They beat three different coastal champions and Notre Dame over the past 4 out of 5 years, with last year being the lone exception of the Coastal actually winning the ACC, by a total of 176-40. So it's not even been close. The ACC Coastal Division has not put up a fight against the Atlantic. And I think that's part of the problem, is when you go into an ACC championship game that you know is going to be a blowout, you know which team's already going to win before you get there, it's just kind of an afterthought on Championship Saturday, on what's one of the biggest Saturdays in football. You know, a lot of times there's not playoff implications on the line, or it's just, is one team going to stumble or not? Now, I do feel like one caveat of the changes could be the potential for that team to stumble. You could knock yourself out of the playoffs if you have a poor showing in the conference championship game and you're not playing someone like, say, Florida State when they played Duke. You know, Clemson could have won round two, and it could have knocked FSU out of the BCS National Championship. So there are some caveats to that, but I think the changes are necessary. I think they're good for the conference, and I personally am excited about them. I think you get some variation in matchups. You get to see FSU play some different teams. Like I said before, I would much rather watch Florida State play Virginia Tech or Georgia Tech more often than, say, a Syracuse or a Wake Forest or what have you. Now, as far as your three constant matchups, I don't think you necessarily need to go Miami, Clemson, and say NC State or whatever, because you don't necessarily want all the toughest ACC teams on your schedule every single year. Of course, you shouldn't be scared to play anybody in the ACC, but we already have Georgia coming up to kick off the season, Alabama coming up, you get Notre Dame mixed in there. So, maybe give me a Duke in there, we'll see. But if the changes do happen, I think they will be good for the conference. I think right now we're just kind of in a holding pattern to see what ESPN says, to see how everybody votes. They said there was some mixed opinions on it from the coaches because they do like the divisions. They do like to be able to say, oh, we won the Atlantic division, which, you know, I don't think any fans care about that. I think they'd rather win the ACC as a whole and go into the national picture versus just saying, oh, we won the Atlantic. But, hey, I guess it counts for something. I just really think, as far as Florida State is concerned, you have to get back to the Florida State that is good for college football. There's no doubt Florida State being good is good for college football. And you already have such a large viewing, such a large fan base for a program that's kind of in a down time. So when they get better and they get back to being the Florida State that we know and love, they will be more marketable. They will be almost guaranteed to have that seat at the big boy table, especially as years erode off of the grant of rights. So I'm excited to see the changes if they happen. They actually said that it could be as soon as 2023 that they roll this out. They said they're pretty much going to hold with what they got for 2022. Obviously, negotiations don't happen overnight. They take time. But 2023 could see some changes. So that's probably sooner than later. And I think it definitely gives ACC fans something to be excited about, just to know that the conference knows where they're at. They know they're in an arms race that is college football that they are behind in, and that they have to make changes, or they're going to, you know, again, it's kill or be killed. And right now we are the hunted, not the hunters, so to speak. And that has to change, because a brand like Florida State or Clemson would honestly be better off leaving the ACC altogether and just getting out of the conference. And we all know, if you're a Florida State fan, you really don't care for the ACC anyway, because, to be fair, Florida State made the ACC relevant in football, and we continue to kind of get pooped on, you know, to put it kindly, by the conference in and out every year. And I wouldn't be sad to leave the ACC by any means, but I wouldn't be mad at staying in if you could make the conference more marketable and close that revenue gap. I think it would be great to get Notre Dame to join, but right now it's probably not lucrative to Notre Dame because they have their own individual big TV contract. And then, you know, maybe what are you looking at? Another team like West Virginia? And while I think it makes geographic sense, and if you kept the divisions, it would give you balance that you would need. But in the numbers I looked at, West Virginia is kind of a small market team like most of the other ACC teams, which I don't know who else you're going to be able to get. I think Central Florida would have been a good one to grab, but they're now gone to the Big 12. So if you could poach them from the Big 12, I think you know it's not going to hurt to get them, but it's still another small market team. I think Notre Dame is probably the most obtainable marquee name out there, and they have shown some stubbornness to joining the conference, obviously. 2020 was kind of a preview of what the ACC would look like under the new changes. We didn't have divisions. Notre Dame was a full-time member. And I thought it was a good year for the ACC. They got two teams into the playoffs, albeit they both lost once they got there, but it got in two teams and there was some highly rated games. So I think the changes are moving in the right direction. My biggest concern is how soon can you fix the problem and help close this revenue gap before so much damage is done that you're on a different playing field and you almost can't keep up on a national level. Again, you can compete in the ACC. There's nothing that says you can't, and you just hope that when you get to the national picture, like the playoffs, expanded or not, that you're not going up against a financial juggernaut that you just can't keep up with. Because this is something that we've already seen as far as facilities, number of staffs. I mean, look at the SEC teams that have polo armies, as they like to call them, whereas you have some of the ACC teams that struggle to be able to afford an off-the-field staff. So I definitely think it's moving in the right direction, but I think someone needs to kind of kick it in the rear and get it moving faster, sooner than later. Because as we saw in the numbers I shared earlier, it's bad now, but it's going to get a lot worse in the next 5 to 7 years. So you have to get these changes moving now, or else you're going to get left behind. And that's just the flat out facts of it. And it's not fun to talk about. And by all means, I'm not saying this or sharing these numbers to glorify the Big Ten or the SEC or dish on the ACC or Florida State, but the facts are the facts and the numbers are the numbers. Because I'll be the first to tell you, when I hear an SEC chant, I'll be the first one to roll my eyes, because I think it's the most ridiculous thing in the world to ride off the coattails of the success of basically Alabama for the past decade of the SEC's dominant run. But again, the facts are the facts, and if you want to keep up, you're going to have to make some changes. You're going to have to bring more to the table to demand that money. So again, I think the revenue gap is, to me, the elephant in the room that's going to kill college football, or at least lead to the most dramatic changes. Because unless you go to a power two and then everyone else is just playing second fiddle, I mean, you're going to have to do something to make it more competitive for the other three power five conferences. Now, I personally feel like the super conferences is probably where it needs to head, because I'm not 100% sure why you have teams like Georgia Southern or Coastal Carolina. As fun as they are to watch and as good a years they have, they're never, more than likely never, going to be able to compete with an SEC team on a full schedule basis. Sure, they might show up in one game and surprise somebody, but they're not competing for a national championship, more than likely. So I think that it would be a good move to go to super conferences, but we're not there yet. And so we have to fix the problems that are in our basket right now. And I think that starts with fixing the ACC, fixing your own program, and fixing Florida State. And as much as I think our fan base, doesn't like to kind of swallow the hard pill of knowing that that's not an overnight process, and that may take a little bit, but you just have to get started in the right direction. You have to start winning. You have to start getting the bigger matchups. You have to start showing up when you get the bigger matchups. I mean, look at the Notre Dame game last year. It had, I believe it was almost 7 million viewers on TV. So that was a huge matchup for Florida State. And when you can get marquee matchups like that and you can show up like Florida State did, you know, that's great. That's great for your marketing. That's great for your brand. And so you just have to get more of that. And Florida State has to just get more competitive, like a lot of the ACC coaches said about the revenue gap. You have to control what you can control. And again, I think you can't just push that off, because if you just focus on what you can control, I mean, I know that's all you can do, but you're going to get left behind. But you do have to start with what you can control, and that's fixing this program at this point in time and getting back to being a winning program who's more marketable, as well as the rest of the ACC. Again, Jim Phillips has mentioned that these teams have to start putting football first, because they know that's the bread and butter. They know that has to come first to get the conference where it needs to be, to, you know, a rising tide, as they say, lifts all ships. So you can't just have Clemson and Florida State and maybe Miami carrying an entire conference. But you have seen Wake Forest has gotten better over the years, and NC State has gotten better over the years as far as their program, but you still have a lot of teams that struggle to bring in a big crowd, to bring in a big TV demand, and to just put really a lot of resources into their football program like SEC schools or Big Ten schools do. And so that's something that has to change in order for the ACC to be able to step up and remain at the big boy table. So I guess the change is, you know, it remains to be seen if it'll even happen. Hopefully it will, and hopefully it will lead to more revenue for the conference and for FSU. But at least they are showing the acknowledgement that they know change has to happen. And I think that is at least a positive first step. But there is a lot of change in college football right now. There's a lot that I think makes people nervous, and whether the game's going to be around, whether they'll even recognize it in a few years. But again, change is the only constant, and you have to adapt and overcome, or kill or be killed, and you will be left behind in this game because, you know, this is kind of a zero-sum game. There are winners and losers. Not everybody wins. So, you know, you have to do what is necessary. And I do think that Florida State is putting themselves in a position. They've expanded their off-the-field staff. They got Rising Spear in place. There's the other NIL collective as well. So I think they are trying to take the steps forward. I think Michael Alford is a football-first athletic director, and he knows the things that need to be done. And I think that's going to help them out a lot. So, you know, the last David Coburn, he was more of a let's not right the ship but keep it from sinking, because we knew Florida State had a lot of financial issues and to overcome. But now I think you have to start stacking up the wins on the field and showing the progress that comes along with these improvements, with the new locker rooms, with the new staff, off the field positions and whatnot. I think that the wins have to start coming at some point. I think Norvell is a good coach. I think he can be a guy to right the ship. But there's only so much vision to sell until you have to start showing results on the field. And in the next episode that I'm planning on recording for you guys, I am going to take a look at three things that I feel have to come true next year for Florida State to have a successful season. We'll define a little bit of what a successful season would even look like. Can Norvell be the guy to lead FSU back to where it needs to be? And I think you guys will really enjoy that episode. I got some things planned. I have put up an article on our website about it already for the three keys. So you can make sure to check that out. It goes pretty good in depth into the things I'm looking for. And I have some other stuff that I'm working on that I'm going to get out for you guys real soon. And so with that said, I think we're going to wrap it up here. We're already over 30 minutes, so I think we'll go ahead and call it a day on this one. I appreciate you guys listening. Thank you so much again for the support. I know we're still kind of getting our footing in this. Hopefully we can get more on a regular schedule soon. Like I mentioned in the first episode, I do work full time. This is just kind of, I try and put out as much content as I can when I can. So just be on the lookout for that. And I'm going to try to get that one out for you guys real soon. So again, thank you for listening. I hope you all have a great day, and go Noles.